Any questions? One?
We're going to have, at some point, this could become a budgetary issue for this group.
Yes.
And I would like to know what our latent liabilities are in this negotiation. We have the CID, we have malpractice tails, we have any ongoing litigation, whatever. But those are the things and the details that, how's that going to affect the budgets of coming together and what goes over, what stays? And that's something we have to start looking at now. And we need to get a better idea of what our latent liabilities are going to be as we get into budgeting by November and a whole new crew coming on. So I would like to start looking at that.
That has been discussed, and we're already starting to look at that. Our attorney has already given us some information on what the liabilities would be for which side, and there is negotiation to be done. So subcommittees will be working on that, and I would assume that we will have that in the next couple of months before we need to worry about the budgeting process.
Because my concern is the CID. This is a hornet's nest. We didn't want to wiggle, but how are we going to figure out how much that liability is if we don't wiggle the nest? At least I've been told it's a hornet's nest. We don't want to wiggle. I'm not so sure that I understand that concept, other than real hornet's nests. But still, it's a big concern to me.
Okay. Well, we are working it.
Yeah, because as we start doing budget, we have to start planning this, and we're getting, we're already on the summer sailing schedule, fall sailing schedule's out in 7 weeks.
We had talked about writing a letter regarding the CID to the AG's office.
So actually, Carl and I revisited that ground, ironically, in a way, just today before this afternoon's meeting, and we're going to get clarification of our current status from James Fredman, our attorney, early on next week. And I would encourage Pam that we inform the board as to the status without violating attorney-client privilege. Since we're going to be utilizing email, but I'm very curious myself too, because that potential is a big hammer, to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars. So, that said, poking the sleeping bear has, been part of our approach per our attorney's recommendation. So, it's a two-edged sword, so to speak. But I think we're overdue as far as an update, and so we will pursue that. Okay, next item is
Chris, do you have any comment on this?
Me?
Yeah, you. You're the guy that puts numbers in there and where the liabilities are and da-da-da-da-da.
This is when I get to say I'm not an attorney. But, and I'm not an actuary either, so I don't know what our potential liability is related to the CID.
But how does not knowing that affect you working with Carl to do a budget that's due in 4 months?
I don't budget for something that I can't possibly foresee what the number would be. And in the financial statements, in all financial statements, you have to disclose any contingencies in the notes. And we've been doing that since this occurred. We don't know what the liability is. We've asked, and the attorneys can't really provide a number of what the liability would be. And so since we don't know what it could be, when it's that uncertain, the accounting standards are that if it's that uncertain, you just state that liability can't be determined. So, we could dig in further and find out what a range of is from best case to worst case. I mean, best case is nil. In worst case, I quite honestly don't know. So I think part of this is, as well as, and I could be wrong, is that there's kind of a statute of limitations on this, too. So if they aren't doing anything and we're not, and they're not responding, at some point it's going to expire.
Were there a couple of thresholds? You know, obviously criminal statute.
Yeah,
limitation is 10 years or so, and this and that. And when I cited hundreds of thousands of dollars, that was going back years ago. There are a range of potential fines, and that would be at the upper range. But still, it's a liability. We have no idea if we're going to get fined at all, and if so, where it's going to fall in that range. If it's at the upper level, we're talking about a couple hundred grand at least. So we can, we talked to Fredman again earlier on next week. We can just revisit that ground and see if he can give us some more discreet. And
I remember I looked through all the flights that were specifically addressed in that CID, and because there was also flights that we, this was all part of, gosh, this would be 2-3 years ago now, that when we were trying to determine, when we were trying to figure out and clean up all the accounts receivable, and what amounts were still sitting there that had been billed that were frozen as a result of this, that amount is, I can't remember specifically, but I want to say it was somewhere in the range of like 30 to 35,000, that it had, if this is resolved and there is no fault or finding on us, then unless the statute is passed and limitations is passed, that we would be owed 30 some, that we would receive 30 some odd thousand. So that's on the positive side, we could actually end up with money. And but I can't remember what the worst case could be.
Well, it was lost of a fee for service revenue, number one, and then it was a variably a levied fine that was, you know, $10,000 or $20,000 per occurrence. I mean, you know,
it could be up to that, whatever they choose.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, it doesn't put a smile on your face as far as the potential. But again, you know, instead of sitting here semi-guessing, you know, we'll get the latest update from counsel, and we'll pass it on to the board.
Yep.
What have we spent in legal expenses so far?
I believe it's about $160,000.
Be nice to wrap that up.
I believe we haven't spent anything in the last couple of years.
We haven't spent hardly any money other than just the occasional call for an update since 2016.
Yeah, this is all the old stuff.
Right.
Yeah, I've lost. Where the heck are we?
We are in new business.
Update
aren't we?
Long-term care facility.
Okay, you're on deck. Okay.
And Lauren already jumped his, so he's done.
Yeah, I don't know where Warren is. Let's put him at after adjournment. How's that? Pam.
Okay. Last month at our meeting, the board, we voted to contribute $15,000 to the long-term care, the feasibility study. We have made that payment to the Inter Island Healthcare Foundation. And with that payment, plus community donations and a portion of the network grant payment that they will reimburse us, we're a little over $30,000 of the $50,000 that we think it might take for the feasibility study. So that is encouraging news. The long-term care network that the district is a part of is made up of 14 other hospital districts around the state of Washington. And Ben Lindy Kugel, the executive director of the Association of Washington Public Hospital Districts, was very much involved with working with the Centers of Medicaid and Medicare for getting better reimbursement for rural communities for their long-term care. Sadly, he passed away last Thursday night, unexpectedly. So it's a big loss for the Association of Washington Public Hospital Districts. He's been in that position for years, and he was very well known and thought of. So right now there's a bit of getting together with everyone to kind of find out what he had pledged and what was going on. So we should get an update, a better update of that shortly. But before he passed away, like I say, they were very encouraged that we would get a better rural reimbursement rate for long-term care. And they felt like that was one of the things that really was necessary for all of the rural communities, because that, you know, that is a major reason why a lot of the long-term care facilities were closing, because they just couldn't, with the number of Medicaid and Medicare patients, afford the cost for that. And we also were in a unique position for our county, because we basically are, like, our whole area has a lot of Medicaid age patients, so we're considered an older population community, and they were looking to see to have a
It's almost better without.
It's better. Yeah.
Okay, it's ringing in my ear. They were looking to see that we might be considered for a pilot study for this problem for rural communities. And the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Innovation sent out a request for information about what was happening in our area and our demographics and things such as that. And a member of the Inter-Island Healthcare Foundation responded to that request, and so that is being looked at, and they're going to look at that information and couple it with what the network had already been done, so we might be awarded a pilot study, which would enable us to get a per dollar per person money that coming in that we can spend as we see fit to the problems that we have, and maybe come up with a suitable study and to how to help our community with the problem of the long-term care nursing. So that is very, very encouraging. And while we were at the conference these last couple of days, we were able to meet with Jody Corona, who is doing the health facilities planning, the feasibility study. She's already started getting good data. We're going to focus it mainly on San Juan residents, but also do scope outside to Orcas and Lopez for their information. We talked about having a survey go out possibly to our residents and the county to get some more information from people. And the study probably will be finished, a big majority of it, by the end of August, but the final report would be probably in September. And so once we get that information, and by that time we might know if we've been selected for that pilot study, so all of that can come together in one, you know, nice package. She also is coming to the island on July 22nd, and we're having a meeting with the Healthcare Foundation and herself to sit down and look at things so far and be able to talk face-to-face and look at those things. So I'm very encouraged that it's moving forward. This is not something and a problem that we can solve just overnight or a few months or, you know, a year, but we are actively working on solutions that we could put in place for our community. And I would like the community to be encouraged that we are looking at it. We have gotten the attention of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid centered on the problems, and they are paying more attention and trying to sit down with the rural communities to see if they can enact some kind of a change. Also, the not only the reimbursement rates, but also the legal restraints that they have had as far as definitions of what you have to have, as far as the how many people you have to have, the workers, and how many hours, and where they can come from, and the certifications, and, you know, they had these definitions that they couldn't work at the, if they worked at the hospital for an hour, then they couldn't work at the nursing home. So they're looking at all of that, so that a good effective change might be made. So I will report back on our meeting from the 22nd and any other news that I get.
Thank you, ma'am. Next unfinished business, air transport denials. That, I think, basically has been very well covered. Thanks to you, Dr. Johnson and Dr. Diamond. I fully concur with what you presented.
I have a letter from him as well that I can hand out.
I was curious if there was a way, there were 14 denials, if there's a way to, I'm sure that it's HIPAA protected as to who those community members were that are now facing these high medical expenses for denied transport. Is there a way to, you know, get some word out about helping them pay for that?
Well, those denials are you know, just because the OIC said, oh gosh, they should be sustained, that doesn't mean that they were sustained. They don't have the power to do that. They have to go through the appeals process, which is still pending for those.
Uh-huh.
And so Airlift Northwest and Island Air and their advocates and people assisting their clients, you know, are still working as hard as ever to get those resolved. The good news is the vast majority at the 11th hour are sustained, that they're paid for, mm-hmm. but the process is still painful.
Yeah, I just wonder if there's a way we can set up some sort of safety net in our community, because when a doctor decides a patient needs to be transported, that should really be the bottom line for care. But how do we support those that are then faced with that expense? It's not really a PhD topic, it's more of a community issue.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think ultimately you're going to have to wait to see how many actually come to the end of the road and fall off the cliff. Hopefully it'll be few. Mm-hmm. So far it's been very few.
It's 14 now outstanding?
Well, they're still pending. Yeah, it's 14. Yeah. But more to come. You know, that was just a point.
Oh,
coming.
Yeah. It's going to keep coming.
So, as was mentioned by Dr. Johnson, you know, we need to be proactive in terms of pursuing LifeWise and their policies as ratified and okayed by the OIC. And that's a process that fortunately hasn't been concluded yet. And I don't know if we mentioned it earlier, but we met with the Primera representative. We haven't mentioned that? Okay. So Primera was one of the, which is the mother company of LifeWise. And we found out that they were one of the sponsors for the event, and so we said, well, where are they? We want to talk to them. Well, they were didn't have a booth, but there was a lady in attendance and who we met with. It was myself and Diane Boltler, who is PhD number 3 from Orcus, a physician himself, and Ann Pressa, the superintendent for PhD 2 and 3, and Pam and myself. And we sat down with this very nice lady. You remember her name? I don't either. I have her car, but I couldn't find it. But in any event, I think we made some very good, solid, well-founded points with her. And she said, well, one of her comments was, good thing we're doing this now because we don't have a lot of time to address some of these issues, which to me reflected a very positive attitude. And so we're going to pursue that. The alternative was to wait for the OIC point us in the direction of a representative from LifeWise. Well, when that's going to happen, who the heck knows, but we weren't going to wait around, and we didn't. So maybe we get the ball rolling in our favor, because that's where our potential is, the potential of the Kaiser Permanente. I think, you know, that's probably history, because mm-hmm. they're already gone out the back door. So anyhow, thanks for the question. New business, next item, EMS and Trauma Council, and Rebecca, you and Lainey, who wants to start?
I'll start. So the regular agenda was pretty much overshadowed by Dr. Sullivan's announcement of his retirement at the end of July, or near the end of July. He basically cited his frustration with the Department of Health, his frustration with the ongoing investigations and the lack of support for MPDs that the Department of Health has. He also said that when he's no longer MPD, he will be working hard to make changes at the Department of Health regarding the MPD program. Meanwhile, this council has the responsibility to find a replacement MPD, and Lainey can fill us in on what's going on, because Lainey, other job is finding an MPD.
Just one of them. So as I don't get this wrong, and the council, first off, you guys have been part of the County EMS Council for over 30 years, so I kind of took it on because I've been there for kind of recruiting all but one MPD, the one that was in place when I got here. Anyway, so when Dr. Sullivan resigned from his position as County MPD, that will be effective July 31st. He is willing to continue providing service as a supervising physician for both Orcas and Lopez Islands. The medical program director is appointed, certified, and contracted by Washington State Department of Health to perform duties prescribed in WAC 246-976-920, and if anybody wants copies, I'll make copies. The Department of Health provides indemnity to MPDs in this role, and there's an RCW on that. Because of this, the Department of Health leads recruitment practices and process and works with local councils to identify candidates. Our county's EMS Council is assisting Department of Health and the MPD's recruitment activities will interview candidates mid-July. We're going to coordinate with the local medical community. I've talked to numerous people, doctors and staff at the hospital over here. Had discussions regards the University of Washington clinics, which have nothing to do with EMS and don't care. And that's over on Orcas and Lopez. Shaw has nothing over there at all. Let's see, what else do I want? The final candidate will work on interviews, having council members there, and perhaps I'm going to ask for higher staff over at the hospital, perhaps Marianne or Beth, to sit in on those. And I've got a list of questions that the Department of Health recommends or suggests that we could ask during interview. And we've got the questions we've asked over past years, because I have those in my computer. And as things progress, I will keep you guys informed. We have something in place, should we not find somebody by the end of July, that one of the other medical program directors from another county will sign off for us until we get somebody if we have not filled the position by that time. So I think it's all pretty well under control.
Thank you. Very good. Thanks, Lainey. Carl, any comments?
No, I think Lainey's got it all. Again, one of the things that we were looking for was such a short timeline, what happens if that drop dead date of, you know, the end of July, but Katie Holstein was very helpful in getting that set up. So basically working with another county MPD who will sign off on things, won't be hands-on active in terms of helping to establish protocols and training, but will basically let us practice under his license.
Very good. Actually, you practice under the supervising physician's license.
The supervising physician, so I've been sent all these lovely laws to read. The supervising physician functions under the medical program director.
But so, not under his license. He practices under the chain of command.
Correct.
But you practice underneath the license of the supervising physician. That's the same issue that we had with Stone that was brought up when he left and there was a gap. So you practice under the supervising physician.
Yeah.
Now, the state is very nice. they give the MPD liability insurance. How much do they pay them? I heard $400 a month, which turns out to be about 85 cents an hour for that job. So I wonder what how we propose to attract people. I don't know. We need to check the numbers, but that's what I've heard.
The state pays a small amount on the contract. The County EMS Council bills every department involved in our county a set fee, and each group within the county gets one vote because otherwise it was weighted to whoever's island the meeting was on. And it's set up that money, the majority of that money goes to the medical program director as well.
And how much money is that?
At this point, I'd have to go look that up. I'm not the coordinator, so I don't have all the numbers.
Yeah, I understand that.
And the supervising physician contract and fees, those up until recently, the medical program director did all the supervising physician stuff and received all that funding as well. And supervising physicians cannot be asked to do anything more than what the state would require of a medical program director. So you can't demand more of them unless you're going to go out and get extra insurance and stand behind them for making those demands.
Okay.
Again, thank you, Lainey. Next order of business is resolution 19-507, which reads established pay periods and policy. Pam Hutchin.
I turn it off.
This is a record-keeping change for San Juan Island EMS to change the payroll period. It has been from the first of the month through the 31st of the month. Now it is going to end on the 25th of the month, and payday is the last working day of the month, whatever that falls on. But this makes the pay date for employees changing from the 7th of the following month now back to the end of the same month that the payroll is incurred. So the county payroll department, Michelle Novak, and they were also thinking that this would be a good change. It's better for the payout of expenses and liabilities for the payroll, the federal taxes, and all of that, because they can pay them in the same month, where when we had the payroll coming out on the 7th of the month, there was always a month lag time of the expenses, and it was very hard to figure out if they actually were paying them correctly. So this took place, the first one this month, the 26th, the payroll went in, and Carl, did that go well?
Yes.
And did the majority of the personnel, are they okay with the change?
Yes.
And everybody's on board with that? So that's per the auditors and the RCDEVs, you need a resolution for your payroll period and state when it is. And so that's what this is.
Yeah. And so another thing to point out, this puts us in line with how the majority of the county runs payroll as well. So mm-hmm. It was the way the payroll was being run was kind of adding a lot more layers and time requirements from the county and on us and from our record keeping in our financials. It was all the year-end stuff was always a mess because of this, and so I think this should smooth everything out and bring it all back kind of in a consistent manner with the rest of the county, and people actually get paid in the month that they work in.
Move that we accept resolution 19-507.
I'll
second.
Pick who you want to second.
Any discussion?
No.
Call for a vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Passes unanimously. Thank you, Pam. The next resolution is 19-508, revised 2019 budget for San Juan County PhD number one. Pam?
After we received our beginning cash letter from the county the end of April, we usually do a revised budget to that effect. And as I explained earlier, the unanticipated revenues that came in, I revised the budget to that effect. And on your budgets, the blue writing is the additions of things that came in, especially on the revenue side. And in red are the figures that were changed from the original 2019 budget to the revised 2019 budget. Also, we had expenses that we had approved to pay out. We increased Nathan to full-time status, so we had that increase in our budget. We approved the $15,000 to be paid out for the long-term care. We had extra public record expenses, so we had enough reserves to cover that, but with this budget and the unanticipated revenues, I was able to do the budget where all of those expenses have been covered and the revenues coming in to where we did not have to change the operating reserves. So we're back to, you know, not touching those for even all the expenses for 2019 we incurred. So that is the budget revised, and the resolution states that.
I move we accept resolution 19-508.
Second. Discussion? Call for a vote. All in favor say aye.
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 Passes unanimously. And the next and last resolution is that 19-509, which reads surplus of EMS equipment. Chief, who's in?
Broken computer. Just not working anymore. We need to dispose of it. I have the hard drive disposed of properly, so we protect any public health information that may or may not be on that, which I seriously doubt it is, but we'll dispose of it properly.
Very good. Mark?
I move we accept resolution 19-509.
I'll second.
No, I will second.
Oh.
No. Any discussion?
No.
Heck no. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Passes unanimously. The meeting is adjourned. And thank you, folks, Chief Collins and Dr. Johnson. And Everett Clary.